Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I need a number 1 to 10, 1 being not at all, 10 being an insane amount of FOMO for missing out on MagicCon Vegas.
That's a tough question. Gosh, I was all ready for you to team me up as like Ethan the Railbird Sachs or something. I don't know. Like, I don't think FOMO is the right thing to describe how I feel. I honestly feel like I made the right choice for myself. I was talking to you briefly this weekend about like, it's so hard to think about going to Vegas, spending all that money and that time out of your schedule and whatever, to be near people that you're never near. Like for me to travel to see you and then to be like, okay, bye, I'm going to go play Sealed all day and basically never get to talk to you. That just feels not great to me. Like there's a real push-pull there. So I really felt great about getting to follow all of the amazing runs that so many of our peers did this weekend. Plus, I was like, law of averages, if I went there, it seems
there's
like
no chance you were doing well because too many other content creators absolutely crushed it.
That's exactly right. So I was like, I feel like that would have made me feel worse. So all told, I think I don't feel FOMO, but I do feel like pride is not the right word, but I'll say pride for how well so many people did this weekend.
Yeah, I think it was awesome. I have serious FOMO, but I mean, I'll let you be rational about it. I was at Marching Band all weekend, constantly on Twitter and opening the Lords Limited Discord just to cheer on all the other content creators that were doing awesome in Vegas. And I agree with you in the sense that I do think I also made the right choice for myself to not take a weekend off from Marching Band and travel. Like I would have left, missed several days of school, have flown in late tonight, like be getting up early to go to school. I would just be wiped, and I'm already wiped. So I can't imagine having traveled to Vegas. I just don't think it was very realistic. So I feel like I made the correct decision, but there's still some serious FOMO. There's a lot of cool stuff happening at MagicCon Vegas.
So much cool stuff. But before we get to this weekend, Ben, I need us to chat real quick about what happened last weekend. We left our listeners on the edge of their seats. I was 3-1 going into draft two. You were 4-0 going into draft two. Folks know how my run went if they checked out our YouTube channel. I posted my first run there and let everyone know that I basically just sort of fizzled out in run two. Drafted what I thought was a pretty cool black-white control deck, and then just got a little stomped and a little nerfed by Agatha's Cauldron. Some of the recursion I was trying to run to get some creatures out of my yard just got completely hosed by that card. But no worries, because what happened to you in draft number two, Ben?
Won that $2,000, baby. 8-1.
You love to see it. You drafted the nastiest red-white aggro deck. It was so good. Was that your first time playing Boros?
It was my second time playing Boros. Shout out to you for being on Discord and being like, no, you really want to do this. This is how red-white works. My sweet summer child of many colors. Yeah, my drafts were largely on rails. I mean, I can't claim to have done anything super special. I think most people would have drafted the decks I drafted in my seat. I draft one, first picked a black-green card. The Mosswood Dread Knight was black-green on rails. Draft two started red-white and stayed red-white. I think the best thing I did was stay very disciplined, which was hard for me. I think people are kind of either predisposed to hedge or stay in the lane, and I am very predisposed to hedge as a drafter, and I had good lanes open to me and had chances to solidify myself in the good lanes that were open to me, and I took every chance I could to solidify myself. I think that was the best thing I did. Plus, obviously, played very well. Like you don't get to 8-1 without playing good Magic, and I got lucky along the way as well. So yeah, and shout out to a bunch of other folks in the Discord who cashed as well.
Yeah, it was super awesome to see folks in the Discord cashing with $500, $1,000, or $2,000 last weekend. That was super awesome. Speaking of the Discord, let's do a little segue here, and then we'll get into all the good stuff that happened this weekend. A little segue to the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show is always free, but if you want to give back, if you want to get in on the best Magic community on the internet, full stop, that's the Lords Limited Discord. I really, truly believe that. It's so awesome. We're going to shout some folks out from the Discord in just a second. But if you don't know what Discord is, it's just like a giant chat room. And we have a ton of little like sub channels in there. We had some like watch along stuff for the 100K in Vegas this weekend as well. So we got to like track people's results that we wanted to track. That was really fun. Got to cheer some people on, people sharing their pool, people sharing their various accomplishments there. And just a great spot for, you know, events like the Arena Open last weekend, events like the championship qualifier that'll be next weekend. Limited runs for that happened yesterday, and they'll be happening on Friday on Arena for the Saturday and Sunday sealed tournament. I'll be playing in that, so fingers crossed that we have some good content there, good pool to run out on our YouTube channel. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. And this week, we're welcoming Christopher, Tim, Rodney, Famous Pete, Eric, Curtis, and Tom. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough to those folks and just everyone over the years that has subbed to the Patreon and the Discord for being an amazing community. Like, I feel it so much when I have marching band all day. Mm. Like, the fact that I can pop Discord open on my phone and feel plugged into Magic and feel part of a community is incredible. So thank you to everyone for being part of that Lords of Limited community. Shout out also to CoolStuffInc.com, where they've got cool stuff in stock. Best place to go on the internet for anything you need Magic the Gathering related. And you can use checkout code LOL, all caps, to get 5% off anything you need in the store. Usually I'm shouting out booster boxes to store in the draft closets, you know, make sure you've got product to open and crack with friends. But I think this weekend we're going to shout out some singles. They're like, I'm fired up about competitive Magic here. Maybe you are like a dabbler in Standard and Draft. You got dreams of being on the Pro Tour. Maybe you need to pick up some singles for that Commander deck. Maybe you need to pick up some singles for fleshing out one of these sweet Standard brews. Agatha's Cauldron, kind of a breakout, you know, little combo deck at the old Worlds in the Standard portion. So a lot of sweet decks. If you need to pick up some cards for those for your collection, please do all of that at CoolStuffInc.com and use checkout code LOL all caps when you do.
Yeah. So Ben, here in our notes, where we've got some Vegas news to recap, you have the world's top eight first. I mean, world schmurlds, you know,
like world schmurlds. I agree. The main event was the 100K. 100% co-sign that. But this world's top eight is stacked.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got Lorenzo Terlizzi, Greg Orange, Kazune Kasaka, Reed Duke, Simon Nielsen, John Emmanuel Duprat, Willie Adel, and Anthony Lee. I mean, come on. Is this Reed's second top eight in a year at the Pro Tour after winning one? Like, that's incredible.
He's just crushing. Also, I don't think Simon Nielsen has lost this year. He's just in the top of every tournament.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to me. I had the privilege of losing to Jean-Emmanuel Duprat in the finals of a 3-0 draft, a traditional traditional draft on MTG Arena. That savagely misplayed to throw against
him. Yeah, shout out to you for sure. So honorary ninth place at World's Top 8 for Ben. And we will be talking about the two featured World drafters today, getting our armchair quarterback glasses on or whatever. But I want to talk about the Vegas 100K. I mean, it was incredible. Like, completely against the odds, I would say, for so many of the people that we know that are in the content community to do so well on day one in sealed. That's so hard to do.
Yeah, you have to open a good pool and play well. But more importantly, the thing that is out of your control, you have to open a good pool. Like, LSV, an insanely good Magic player, just, I think, opened a dud of a pool from what I saw on Twitter and didn't make day two. Like, there's a significant luck factor in sealed.
Yeah, significant luck. And you have to build the right pool. You have to get lucky in the games as well. And you also have to play super well as well. So had a lot of people either, I think, 6-2, 7-1 going into day two. People like our friends over at Mystical Dispute Pod, Garrett Gardner and Carl Chase. We had, of course, Alex Nikolic, Quarter Calls. We had folks from our Discord, Grim Monolith, Valley G619, DC Sports, aka Nicole Dubin, and Jason. Yay, Jason ILTG. If you're ever on the 17 Lanes leaderboard, you know that they are top of the heap in a lot of the stuff over, I think, primarily best of three for Jason a lot of the time. Jason Yay got top eight, is going to be on the Pro Tour and competing for that number one slot in the draft today.
Yeah, also Alex, finishing in 13th place, had a win and in match against Andrea Mengucci. Like, what is that like? I was watching on
Twitch. I was too.
Were you really? I was watching on Twitch. There was like a phone cam of Alex and Andrea. It was just awesome to see Carl finishing in 16th. So many people in contention for the Pro Tour spots, so close. And Alex just displaying excellent sportsmanship with a handshake at the end. You just love to see it. There's such an awesome photo on Twitter of Alex shaking Andrea Mengucci's hand. And I'm sure, like, bittersweet for Alex, because I'm sure he would love to be on the Pro Tour. But just an incredible weekend for all of those folks. So huge shout out to all of those people.
I mean, he's like knocking on the door, clearly. Like he was doing a lot of the limited PTQs on MTGO for a while and like getting really close to the top eight there a lot and then just sort of knocking on the door here. So I think it's only a matter of time for Alex before he will unfortunately have to sleeve up some sort of 60 card monstrosity.
Sounds horrible.
Sorry, RIP to you, Alex. But yeah, so incredible. And shout out to Esporter Official on Twitch for doing that phone stream. I was like glued to it. I was like, I don't care. This is grainy.
I couldn't see a thing.
Yeah, Michael
loved
Puente,
every second of it.
I did too. Just doing some really good like commentary for us to keep us posted. Hopefully he'll get to, he was saying he wanted to do some of that for the top eight of the 100K today. So hopefully the judges let him close enough to the tables to do that. Shout out as well to all of the incredible players, just like sort of proving that, you know, we're talking all about the luck of these events, but you're seeing these crushers, these content crushers at the top. You're also seeing some like old guard pros at the top as well. Ben S, David Williams, Matt Nass, Tom Martell, Manguchi, we talked about making top eight, Jacob Wilson. Like there was that picture of Alex and Mengu's draft pod like before it happened, and I was like, is that David Williams in the back right? And he's like a big poker pro too, so he's like someone that I've like followed even before I got back into Magic, someone I followed like watching World Series of Poker stuff back in the day, a little starstruck about him. So just incredible to see all of those big names at those top tables.
Well, I think one of the coolest things about like kind of, I would say our crew, but not possessively, but like our peers, as a good way to frame it, the way you said it, doing so well against big names, like it makes me feel like I can do it too, you know?
Yeah.
And for some reason, there's still like, I don't really think there necessarily should be, but like, you know, just cash the arena open for me personally. That feels like different than doing it in paper at an event mm-hmm. like this somehow still mentally, and seeing so many of our peers do well makes me feel like I could do that too. You know, I think you don't from our conversations, but I would still, I think one time like to play on the pro tour. That is an idle dream of mine that I have about Magic.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like against it. Like I'm going to play in the qualifier next weekend,
for
you know,
sure.
But that's more about my, like, I'm kind of fired up in general about high stakes Magic. I prefer to play it from the comfort of my computer chair, but I'm just fired up about high stakes Magic. I was kind of bummed SCG Con Pittsburgh is coming up in November. And last time it was here, it was Team Sealed. And I got to do it with Stunlock and Strix Familiar. And we got to place, I think, eighth in that tournament, which is super fun. It's unfortunately going to be Modern, but I'm like jonesing for some Team Sealed, some something happening, maybe a little closer to home. But yeah, fired up about competitive Magic for sure.
Agree. That stakes is the word you said. Like there's just been some Magic with stakes lately, and it's so good. Speaking of, we've had a lot of questions about the Lords versus Resources showdown being scheduled, and we're still in the works. We're trying to figure it out. So if anybody's wondering if they missed it, we're still trying to schedule it. It is tricky to get six adults schedules lined up
across three different time zones. Yeah, I feel like we got really lucky for whatever the year and a half, 2 years, we never missed a set. And now I think that luck has perhaps run out a little bit in terms of coordinating everybody. But now that Worlds has died down, you know, Marshall was prepping for that. Certainly Marshall and Luis were prepping for various parts of this weekend. I think now that that'll be over, hopefully when everyone's home and settled, we can get that on the calendar.
Also, one last hero to really shout out with all of this is Mike Preventure from the Lords of Limited Discord, who is posting results round by round all weekend long. Just personally, I want to say a huge thank you because made my Saturday infinitely better at Marching Man, not having to like dig through the standings every time and just being able to pop up in the Lords of Limited Discord and cheer for folks while also seeing the results posted.
Yeah, that was really, really fun. So shout out to Mike as well. Just another great perk of the Lords of Limited Discord.
And one last feel-good story here. Another member of the Lords of Limited Discord, Wise Vehicle, was attending MagicCon Vegas, and his son, Liam, won a serialized secret layer Swords to Plowshares. Just an awesome feel-good story as well. So huge shout-out to Liam, and congrats on the Swords to Plowshares.
I had a coaching session with both of them, mostly with Liam, that morning, the morning before they were in their hotel room on the bed, just Skyping in and chatted with them a little bit about WoW. And I knew they were going to crush a two-headed giant sealed as well. And it really gave me like father-son squad goals. I was like, man, if this is what I have to look forward to with Jonah in like 12, 13 years, that'd be so sick.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah. yeah, pretty feel good story there. So we're gonna take a quick ad break and then we'll be back with some World's Draft reviews. There's a nip in the air. The leaves are starting to turn. Pumpkin flavored everything is back, which means
fall is in full swing. So my schedule is packed to the brim. School during the day, marching band in the evenings, competitions all day Saturdays, and podcasting on Sunday. I've got to fit in drafts wherever I can, which leaves little time for anything else.
Well, you're in luck, because Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, has wholesome, dietitian-approved meals delivered straight to your door. You'll skip the grocery store, the chopping, the prepping, and cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes. So all you have to do is heat and enjoy and get back to trophying your drafts.
Not only does Factor have great options for dinner, but they've got the rest of the day covered as well. For lunch, try some effortless meals like grain bowls and salad toppers that are ready to eat when you're on the go.
They've also got breakfast covered with apple cinnamon pancakes and cheddar and egg bites, plus snacks and beverages like cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies.
These are food tokens that you'll be happy to pay 2 mana for.
Head to factormeals.com/LOL50 and use code LOL50 to get 50% off.
That's code LOL50 at factormeals.com/LOL50 to get 50% off.
All right, Ben, I know you want to rail. I know you want to rage and rail about, I don't know, some misconceptions about color pair power in this format. What do you want to say?
Yeah, so we got this tweet from MTG Arena that 12 players went 3-0 in their first Wilds of Eldraine draft. And by color, here were the 3-0 decks. Mono white, mono black, two white blues, which is widely perceived, yeah, I think, to be the worst archetype by a lot in Wilds of Eldraine. White red, white green, blue black, blue red, black red, red green, green-white splashing red, and blue-green splashing white, which I think if you...
So it's a Jund format, confirmed.
Jund format, confirmed. I mean, like, yeah, so there's several things. One, I think this is awesome for Wilds of Eldraine. Let's start with a positive. I think showing that pod play or high-stakes magic, like high-stakes drafts, really does... I think draft is self-correcting, but the higher the skill level of the drafters you're drafting with, right? I don't know that draft is really that self-correcting, certainly in the best of one queues on, yeah, Arena. I just don't think that's necessarily a part of it. But I think you still can see what the format is or could be if you're paying attention and not just buying into the data narrative. And I think, first of all, white-blue, I want to shout out white-blue just as an archetype that I've been drafting a lot lately. Not even necessarily white-blue splashing everything with the prophetic prisms, but just straight up blue-white control, I think, is a very strong archetype in the format. Like, Tapping Matters fell a little bit of flat, but I don't think white-blue as an archetype, as a control archetype, fell flat. So it's just all kinds of things like that to figure out. And ever since I saw this, my blood has just been boiling about the data, which is a rant we do not need to get into on the podcast. And they're not correlated at all. I'm just a maniac. But I don't think the data tells the whole story. And I think the data is telling the story so much in the limited community right now. And I think I do really, truly, passionately feel that it is holding people back in some senses from getting better at limited magic.
Yeah. Because you think it stops people from thinking outside the box
a little bit? I think it stops people from thinking for themselves. Yeah, yeah, that's what I think. I think it stops people from being creative, and I think it stops people from problem solving and all of the things that make magic great. I think it is copying your neighbor's homework instead of doing the homework for yourself and learning as a teacher.
All right.
So, my 2 cents, but mostly want to highlight that Wilds of Eldraine draft is excellent and very well balanced, it seems, at the highest echelons of play.
So for day one, we are going to get to peek over the shoulder of the reigning champ himself, Mr. Nathan Stoyer, who we've had the pleasure of watching draft many times before at these top level events. Ben, we have not talked about this draft yet, which I'm very excited about because I think we're going to be in great disagreement here about some of the choices. So here we are. We're sitting down for day one draft with Nathan. He looks down at the following cards as options. At common, we've got a Torch the Tower, single red, deal 2. As bargain, if you bargain it, deal 3, creatures exiled, and you scry 1. At uncommon, he's got Witchstalker Frenzy, 3 and red for the instant, deal 5 to a creature, costs 1 less to cast for each creature attacking. There's Up the Beanstalk, constructed staple, 1 and a green for an enchantment when ETBs, or when you cast a spell with mana value 5 or more, you draw a card. And then his Enchanted Tale slot is a card that I like quite a bit. I know you like quite a bit. This is Oversold Cemetery. It's one on a black for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have four or more creatures in your graveyard, you get to return a creature from your graveyard to your hand. And his regular rare is a bit of a dud. In the Dane, the Pyrohammer, 2 red, 4/4. Whenever an instant or sorcery spell you control the targets, only a single creature deals damage to that creature. Immidane deals that much damage to each opponent.
Saying Immidane the Pyrohammer is not an exciting rare has the ring of someone that has never frantic firebolted their opponent's creatures for 10 plus damage to the opponent's face. We need to get you on board.
I don't think that gets me on board with Immidane, but that does feel like a real achievement unlocked. Are you telling me you've done that?
Oh, absolutely.
Where are the screenshots? Where are the screenshots?
Listen, I've gone deeper than that. That's small potatoes. Small potatoes.
Just give me a taste. Give me a little something something on Twitter, please. Okay, so for me, I think Immidane's not in the conversation.
I agree that it is not in the conversation here.
I think, so let's start by narrowing down between the two red spells. Which do you like?
It's so tough. Like putting me on really the spot there. It's really close. I think I would take Witchstalker Frenzy, which I think is probably the pleb pick rather than the pro pick. But I just think the ceiling is so much higher on Witchstalker Frenzy.
And you feel like the pick here is pretty clearly, as I see from the notes, Frenzy or Torch.
Yeah, I would have both of those cards ahead of Up the Beanstalk, Oversold Cemetery, and Immidane the Pyrohammer. Like, by I think a fair amount. The only argument I think you could make for taking Oversold Cemetery or Up the Beanstalk is that there's three red cards and you want to ship red cards as a result. But I think that's a weak argument because then if red's flowing, what are you going to do? Just keep passing red? Like, I think you're supposed to take the best card in the pack, pack one, pick one. And I think it is one of the two red cards for sure. Feel pretty strongly about that.
So my argument, and that's part of my argument for Up the Beanstalk, but I agree, that's generally not the consideration. One of the things that makes me want to take Up the Beanstalk is that I have the same sort of decision paralysis as you between Frenzy and Torch. Like if I felt like I clearly knew which one was right, I would feel a little more confident in taking a red card.
But don't you feel like both of them are better than Up the Beanstalk?
I don't. I think Up the Beanstalk is really powerful and has a super high ceiling. And I also think that red is, at this point, maybe it's still black, but I feel like red is kind of widely considered the best color in Wilds of Eldraine. I don't know what happened, you know, with the protesting. I don't know what happened with Team Handshake. We'll certainly see some things that I think we must assume Team Handshake was high on that I am not a little later in the draft. But I think that it's reasonable to come into the draft, assuming red will be contested, right? Similar to how we felt about black in LTR, and think that you can get into green. And Up the Beanstalk is like a really good build around to start with for a green deck. So not that I think that this is clearly the right pick. And I do think Oversold Cemetery probably a little bit more trinkety if you're not going to take just straight up a red removal spell.
Yep.
So, but I think if you wanted to take Beanstalk, Frenzy, or Torch here, all three of those are right. And I don't think the Up the Beanstalk pick here is crazy, as you said before our show notes.
I mean, not crazy, but I think you're taking a noticeable hit in card quality. Are you ready for some data?
It's not a noticeable hit in card quality. I don't think that's a fair... That smells to me like someone who's never popped off with Up the Beanstalk.
No, I have popped off with Up the Beanstalk. Only once, albeit, but... Some 17 lands data for you here. Witchstalker Frenzy.
Why are you doing this to me?
Because I want to tilt you.
Okay.
59% game in hand win rate for Witchstalker Frenzy. 57.4 for Up the Beanstalk. And Torch the Tower, 59.8. So it must be the right pick.
Must be the right pick. Thank you for doing that great work and research for us. Shout out. I'm doing just lots of shout outs today. Shout out to Circovitz for doing a sweet thread on cards that change value in top players' hands. And one of the cards the things that really jumped out to me in that was the massive bump that Knight of the Sweet's Revenge got in the hands of top players.
Ooh,
like
yeah.
It went from something like in the, I don't know, 40th range of top on commons to in the top 10, something like number 7 or number 6. So Knight of Sweet's Revenge is the 3 and a green enchantment, makes a food, and then all of your food taps for a single green, and then you can pay 5 GG, sacrifice it, and all of your creatures get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of foods you control. So Knight of Sweet's Revenge is another card that's going to drastically warp your pick order, right? That's why in the hands of top players, I assume that it performs much better, because people know, like, okay, when to take it. I'm not splitting my, you know, tokens between rolls and food. I'm clearly doing the food thing, whatever. I think Up the Beanstalk has a similar sort of, like, okay, I'm going to change some things about it. And so the data, Mr. Wernie, I know you love data, but the data is not going to tell the whole story here.
I agree. That was tongue in cheek for sure, if that didn't come across.
Yeah.
And I think what this pick really says to me, and like no hyperbole at all, is that I would say maybe taking a hit in power level for some preference, like that you maybe want to avoid. Like, I don't think it's a wrong pick. You know what I mean? Like, it's within the realm of reason, but shows maybe I really love this card, maybe from my constructed experiences with it, who knows?
Mm.
But that I see this as a powerful card that I can build around and maximize. I would buy that for sure. And maybe in testing, like, green was better, and in pod play, the aggro deck suffered a little bit. Like, there's all kinds of things there that we can't possibly know because we haven't done pod play, you know what I mean? So I do think it's within the realm of possibility. Just personally, I would have taken one of the two red spells, probably Witchstalker Frenzy.
Yeah. All right, so Nathan has Up the Beanstalk here. Pack one, pick two. I think it really comes down to either a green two drop at uncommon or a green two drop at rare. The uncommon is Welcome to Sweet Tooth, one on a green for a saga. Chapter one, you get a 1/1 human. Chapter two, you get a food token. Chapter three, you get to put X +1/+1 counters on target creature, where X is 1 plus the number of foods you control. And then the rare is Bramble Familiar, 1 and a green for a 2/2. It's a mana dork, taps add green. And you pay 1 and a green to tap, discard a card, return Bramble Familiar to its owner's hand. And then its sorcery is Fetch Quest, 5 green for an adventure, mill 7 cards, then put a creature, enchantment, or land card from among the milled cards onto the battlefield. What are your thoughts here?
My thoughts are you could have given me 100 guesses at the name of the adventure on Bramble Familiar, and I would have never guessed it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I do not know. I think I definitely knew the names of the adventures in Eldraine. I don't know any of them in this format, and I don't know why.
So I think you're always picking a green card here, regardless of what you did pack one, which I think is good for the discussion of the draft going forward because you're incentivized to be green. These are two great green cards. There's not a good red follow-up to either of the red removal spells if you'd started there. And I think between these two cards, you're deciding between raw power and synergy. I think Bramble Familiar is more raw power. Welcome to Sweet Tooth is more synergistically powerful in the food decks. But I agree with Bramble Familiar here, which is what Nathan took. I think, and the tipping point for me is that you have the chance to cast the 7-mana adventure to combo with your Up the Beanstalk.
Yes, exactly. Which is something that I don't feel like Marshall and Paul ever mentioned.
They did.
I feel like they were so hyped on Nathan needing to grab something expensive, some more 5-drops or whatever for the Up the Beanstalk, and never really took into account that he had this built-in 7-mana spell. Okay, so they did. So yeah, so Nathan does take Bramble Familiar. I agree with that for all the reasons you said. Pick three, he sees these cards as options. Red card, Merry Bard's a little too early for that 3/2 that can put a young hero on something. Similarly, a little too early for Return Triumphant, the 1 and a white, return a 3MV or a less creature from the graveyard to the battlefield with a young hero role on it. To bop around somewhere else, there's a Tenacious Tomeseeker, 2 and a blue for a 3/2 with bargain. When it ETBs, if you bargained it, you get to return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. And then there's also a Sir Armont the Redeemer, 3 green-white for a 4/4. Enchanted creatures you control get +1/+1. And when it enters the battlefield, you put a monster roll token on another target creature you control.
Yeah, this card's excellent. I think Sir Armont is the clear best card in the pack. And certainly starting green card is a clear follow-up here for me, I think. Maybe you play it, maybe you don't, but it is definitely the best card in the pack. And about the time after you're solidified in green that you're willing to branch out for a gold card.
Pack four is pretty weak, flat power level. Nathan just stays on color with a Red Tooth Genealogist. That's the 2 and a green, 2/3. When it enters the battlefield, you get to put royal roll token on another creature you control. Pick five is one I really want to unpack. So here are some cards he sees as options. There's a Ratcatcher Trainee. That's the 1 and a red, 2/1. It has first strike on your turn, and it's got the adventure for 2 and a red to make 2 rats at instant speed. There's a Johann's Stopgap, 3 and a blue, bounce a non-land permanent at sorcery speed and draw a card. It also has bargain to reduce its cost by 2. There's a Toonvale Guide. This is 3 and a white for a 2/3 flyer. As a celebration trigger, if you celebrate, it gets +1/+0 and lifelink until end of turn. And in the uncommon slot, there's a Johann Apprentice Sorcerer. This is 2 red-blue for a 2/5. You can look at the top card of your library, and once per turn, you can play an instant or sorcery off the top of your library as if it were in your hand. Thoughts, questions, comments, concerns about this pick, Ben?
So many thoughts. So I think we should start with what Nathan selected, I think, before we dive into our thoughts. Nathan selected two in Veil guide here to follow up and stay in green white with the Sir Armand the Redeemer. I don't love that pick. I think two in Veil guide is a pretty poor card in the format. I think generally a card you're hoping not to play. But then I watched round one where Nathan made them look like Baneslayer Angels. He had two copies of Two in Veil Guide, and I was thinking, well, maybe this guy's on another level than me. But then I think in subsequent games, you saw the drawback of Two in Veil Guide, which is you're tapping out for a 4-mana 2/3 flyer that's vulnerable to removal and like kind of hard to turn on and just was on the back foot. I think Two in Veil Guide is generally a card you're hoping to not play most of the time in the format. And maybe, like, he did manage to turn it into an excellent card. So again, maybe this is something in a testing team or in pod play. This is the type of card that gets better. So certainly willing to acknowledge that maybe there's some stuff going on there that we don't know about, especially seeing how good it looked in the games where Nathan steamrolled with it. I think the other cards are enough good in Ratcatcher Trainee and Johann Apprentice Sorcerer. Like, we talk about the power level gap between cards when you want to hedge. Like, if we're just like sticking to letter grades in the context of the format, I think Two in Veil Guide is kind of like a D.
Yeah.
Johann Apprentice Sorcerer, probably a B, certainly in blue red, maybe bordering on B plus. And Ratcatcher Trainee, just like a solid B minus C plus type card, like I think starts to pull you into red, like certainly seeing it pick five. Like that is kind of late for a rat catcher trainee. And so when you're thinking about, we talk about clocking things or hedging or taking a flyer as a phrase we get a question a lot about sometimes in the Lords of Limited Discord. This is a spot where you want to take a flyer, I think, on branching out into another color here. For several reasons. There's reasons to take a flyer or to branch out into another color. And I think the reason is you're trying to up your power level, right? The higher your power level initially, the more willing you are to try to stay on rails to capture that power level you got early. Nathan's got a fine start, but not a nuts start by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. Like at this point, probably going to be green, but like doesn't have to be if something else is wide open. But certainly not committed to white, right? You have Up the Beanstalk, Bramble Familiar, Red Tooth Genealogist are green cards, and then Sir Armand the Redeemer touching on white as well as green. And I think this is the time to hedge, because if you take Two in Veil Guide here and you pass these red and red-blue cards, it's so hard to then steer the ship in another direction. And we have seen from Nathan's drafts at other times that he is still willing to pivot late. So I don't think this is necessarily locking him in, but if you think about, you're not willing to pivot here. For Johann's Apprentice Sorcerer Ratcatcher Trainee, when are you willing to pivot off of this? You know, that's the type of question I think you need to ask yourself.
Yeah, co-sign all that 100%. I think you've outlined that really well. I think something that you're hinting at that I just want to make sure is clear. It's clear to me based on the Two in Veil Guide he takes here, the one he takes later, and the fact that he ends up building green, white, splash, black, as opposed to green, black, splash, white, means that either he... Team Handshake or both are higher on Two in Veil Guide than the rest of the limited community, I would say.
Yeah, I think that is a reasonable conclusion for sure. But I still think the gap in power level is high enough here that I personally would take Ratcatcher Trainee here, certainly after having started with a red card. But I think even if you take Nathan's route through the draft, I like taking Ratcatcher Trainee here because it gives you outs to just go into Red Green Beatdown. The Ratcatcher Trainee plays excellently with Red Tooth Genealogist that you have so far, like going 2-drop, 3-drop into a 3/2 first striker. Like that's a really powerful curve to start games with. I just think it offers you a lot here.
And because I am much more excited about Up the Beanstalk than you, I would personally be on Johann Apprentice Sorcerer here with the thought of, and I think this is another thing I want to talk about with like when you're making these sort of hedge picks. Is the question I always pose to people I'm doing coaching sessions with or to myself is, what is the path of the draft where this card makes my deck, right? When I take Johann, what am I picturing? And I have a very clear picture in my head of, oh, I'm going to draft green, blue, splash, red adventures. Like Teamer Adventures is a great home for Johann, and it's a great home for Up the Beanstalk because you get, what's it called, Balluna's Gatekeepers, the 6-mana, 6/5 that has the adventure, the one in a blue bounce a thing. So you get a big body that you want that's also a cheap way to have some interaction along the way, has some spell synergy with Johann as well off the top of your library.
Right. And so I think another really interesting thing here is that you and I are hedging in different directions.
Yes.
And I think based on how highly we're valuing Up the Beanstalk, and it sounds like you're higher on the card than me, and I can pick the deck you're describing, Teamer Adventures, I've seen, I haven't played it yet, but I can picture it also. And that seems super reasonable to me. Like, I wouldn't argue that Ratcatcher Trainee is right over Johann's Apprentice Sorcerer here. Like, it's just what style of deck do you see yourself ending up in? And I, personally, I'm more excited about like the no nonsense, like low to the ground, really want to be on board on turn two, want to maximize that Red Tooth Genealogist I just took, and red green beatdown, and also just getting into the best color, I think, and potentially having more wiggle room. I do think between the two, you know, if we want to talk about floor ceiling, Johann Apprentice Sorcerer is certainly the higher ceiling pick, like much higher ceiling. Ratcatcher Trainee is a higher floor pick here. And I think of the two hedges, Ratcatcher Trainee more likely to end up in your final deck. But if Johann Apprentice Sorcerer does end up in your final deck, like certainly like through the roof value if you manage to draft that style of deck here. But regardless, I think from my perspective and my evaluation of Tuenvale Guide, it is right to take either of the two cards here over to Tuenvale Guide.
I agree. So that sort of sets Nathan's path a little bit. I mean, he doesn't see much power the rest of this pack. Pick six, he gets the Iron Crag. That's the rare two mana rock that if you play a legendary, you have the opportunity to turn it into a big equipment. If you had taken Ratcatcher Trainee, if he had been on some sort of a red path here, he does get a Grabby Giant. Pick three, we shouted this out last week as a real overperformer at common, the 4-mana 4/3 with reach that makes a treasure as its 2-mana adventure.
Well, and even for Johann too, like, there's no reason you can't end up base red green splash blue, like with the, with the Grabby Giant and the treasures to help enable you to. And like, this is kind of results oriented here, but this is the reason to hedge, right? Like, you don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the draft. And then all of a sudden, like, because you took Tuenvale Guide, you don't really get a good pick here. Whereas if you hedge and that stuff flows, which it does here, then all of a sudden you've got options. And we know in draft that options are powerful.
Yeah, I will say I didn't at the time and still don't hate the Iron Crag pick. Because if he's thinking about, I mean, he's already got the 7-mana adventure. He's got up the Beanstalk, so he knows he's going to be prioritizing some high mana value stuff. I don't think taking a 2-mana rock is a bad move here.
Right. Or already has the legendary creature too and Sir Armand the Redeemer to potentially turn it on. Yeah, that's reasonable, but I think would be more excited about either of our two hedge picks prior into Grabby Giant than I am about Tuenvale Guide into Iron Crag.
Yes, I agree. So Escapes, pack one, like knowing he's in green, he's got to figure out what his second color is, right? He's, I think, feels like he's more green-white than either of us would because of the stock he's putting in Tuenvale Guide. And honestly, the stock, I don't put that much stock into Sir Armand because in my mind, like Up the Beanstalk and Bramble Familiar are kind of in one camp, this sort of like go over the top value kind of deck. And then I've got Sir Armand and Red Tooth Genealogist in this camp. And then I guess also Tuenvale Guide in this more beat down curve out camp. And those are kind of at odds with each other, I would say.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think if I had been navigating the draft myself and hedged Ratcatcher Trainee into Grabby Giant, that next pack you get to pick up a Boundary Lands Ranger. Like, I think I would have been looking red green beat down at the end of pack one personally. So a couple different routes you could have taken through pack one, I think, for Nathan. But I think overall, largely, the packs were not great after the first four picks for anyone.
Correct. Yeah, pretty weak after that. And I think you might expect that with everybody just like correctly taking the most powerful cards out of the packs early. But still, I think then the packs themselves broke in a pretty weak fashion. So for pack two and three, we're just going to jump ahead and tell a story here to a couple picks. So he starts off pack two with a couple bangers. I would say he gets a really solid two drop for green in Tough Cookie to start things out. That's the 2-mana. 2/2, it's a food. It makes a food. You pay two and a green to animate a non-creature artifact to a 4/4 until end of turn. And then pick two, he gets to pick up a removal spell and Curse of the Werefox. Works well with the roll or a synergy that he's got a little bit with Sir Armand.
Well, and fills a huge hole in his deck, right? Like, at the end of pack one, has no removal, so that's high on the list of things he needs, and he correctly, I think, picks that here, pick two, even with some other cards available to him.
And then in pick three in pack two, I think he steers himself a little bit in the wrong direction here, perhaps giving a little bit more weight to those white cards as we talked about. So cards he sees as options, there's a Prophetic Prism, the 2-mana artifact that draws a card when it ETBs and lets you filter mana. Stockpiling Celebrant, 2 and white for the 3/2. When it enters the battlefield, you can pick up another non-land permanent you control. If you do, you scry 2. Edgewall Pack for the red life, that's the 3 and a red 3/3 menace, makes a rat as well. Stab Wound, 2 and a black enchantment, gets a creature -2/-2, and at the beginning of enchanted creatures controller's upkeep, they lose 2 life. And Knight of the Sweet's Revenge for the green life. I know it's a different green life than he's living currently with the rolls, but it does give him some food options and some ramp, some big options if he's doing that thing with the up the beanstalk. So I think he has a lot of different paths that this pick presents. And I think his selection of stockpiling Celebrant tells us a lot about where he wants to go, where he thinks he's going. Where would, like, given what Nathan had taken, let's say you have to have all of the cards he'd taken up to this point, what would you take?
I think I would take Prophetic Prism or Knight of Sweet's Revenge, but I don't have strong feelings about the pick. But I guess the thing I feel most clearly is I think one of the best and or worst things about my draft at this point is that I don't feel great about my power level. So I think I would be wanting to try to stay open for opening a good card pack 3, or like green kind of felt cut in pack 1. So like trying to leave myself open as much as possible to getting lucky, getting a good card passed to me. So I would not really want to lock in white with stockpiling Celebrant, largely also because it doesn't work super well with anything that I have so far. And
you can pick up the beanstalk, right? That's a cantrip. And you can pick up Bramble Familiar. I know Bramble Familiar can pick itself up, but you can do it without the cost of discarding a card to then get the adventure. So it doesn't do nothing so far.
I guess. I don't have strong feelings about this pick. Like, you could hand me a stockpiling Celebrant. I think I personally would probably take Prophetic Prism, but I'm curious. Sounds like you do have some thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are just that I think the Celebrant locks you into a second color when you don't need to. Which is why I would prefer Knight of Sweet's Revenge personally, because it, again, goes in line with what I'm thinking about with the Up the Beanstalk and the Bramble Familiar in terms of the ramp and the late game of it all, or Prophetic Prism to stay a little bit more open. I don't know, the stockpiling Celebrant, green, white, I don't think gives the weight to Up the Beanstalk and Familiar that I kind of want my draft to go. And maybe Nathan doesn't, and he wants to lean more in the green-white beats of it all, and that's why he takes Celebrant. But that's not where I want to go.
Well, so I think another question that you pose a lot is, if you're in a color or you're doing a thing, have you seen the cards you expect to see for that color? Up to this point, we're like kind of midway into Pack 2 now. I mean, we're a ways into Pack 2, and we've seen 0 Hamlet Gluttons. Does that concern you at all?
Yeah.
Because I think that would be the card I would want most with the type of deck you're describing that would want Knight of Sweet's Revenge here.
100% he wants Hamlet Gluttons. And yeah, it does concern me a little bit that we haven't seen one. But that doesn't necessarily, that's only one common. We did just get a Curse of the Werefox, you know, like that's like another one of the things that I think Nathan was really looking for. He's going to see a Root Rider Fawn next. Not that these are like incredible cards, but you know, outside of Hamlet Glutton, I don't, and maybe Brave the Wild, Screen isn't doing a ton of great stuff at common.
Right, sure.
But yeah, that's a good point. So he's bopping around to some black, maybe a Back for Seconds pick 6 and Voracious Vermin pick 5. He gets a second Up the Beanstalk pack 2 pick 8, which I was really excited about. Important to note that pick 10, the other Sir Armont did not wheel, which he saw in that pack where he took Curse of the Werefox. And then pack 3 just starts out, I mean, beautifully. Pick 1, Candy Grapple. Pick 2, Agatha's Champion, the 5-mana 4/4 trample with bargain. If you bargain it, it fights something. So that's another removal spell for him and a 5-mana value spell for his 2 Up the Beanstalks. And kind of like just mid to good common and Hollow Scavenger. Pick 3 keeps him green. That's a 3-mana 3/2 with the adventure Make a Food. Pack 3, pick 4 has to be one of the best rares in the set. Mosswood Dreadknight. So 1 of the green, 3/2 trample. When it dies, you get to be able to cast it from as its adventure until the end of your next turn. And its adventure is 1 in a black, draw a card, lose a life. I mean, just a banger of a card. And he already has his toes dipped a little bit into black, and maybe even more than just a toe with that Candy Grapple pack 3 pick 1.
Yeah, I'm thrilled about seeing Mosswood Dreadknight here for sure.
And then that leads him into pick 5, where he has the option of Utopia Sprawl for some fixing. And I guess I'm not quite sure if he knows he needs to splash around, because I would be thinking, certainly after Grapple into Mosswood Dreadknight, I'm green black. Is that not what you're thinking at this point?
That's what I was thinking as well also. But then I went back to look at his pool of cards in the draft, and he can't make playables on green black.
He will have to splash.
Right.
He will have to splash. But I think I would rather, I mean, again, it's the weight that he gives to Anvil Guides, that I would rather build the deck green, black, white. I think I would end up splashing. I sort of went and built my own version of his deck at the end of it. I would be green black splashing his 2/5 drops, Sir Armont, and he gets a Charmed Clothier late. That's the 5-mana 3/3 flyer. Puts a roll token on something to give himself that black early and certainly give himself access to Mosswood Dreadknight's adventure as reliably as possible. So here he takes the Utopia Sprawl, which I guess it works in that sense of he knows he has to splash. I might like just picking up a good 2-drop here in Minstrosity. There's also a Lord Skitter's Butcher for him at Uncommon. I like that a little bit less. But yeah, it just seems to me like, you know, Nathan's deck, for all the power and the excitement I had about the double up the Beanstalk and the late Mosswood Dreadknight, it's a little clunky looking. He's certainly playing some cards that I would hope to not play, like the 2/2 guides he has. He's playing a Dark Tutelage. That's the sort of bad Phyrexian Arena variant, or like Dark Confidant on an enchantment variant. And his mana base is not good. Off the heels of our last episode, you know, he's 9 forests, 5 plains, 3 swamps with Utopia Sprawl, Scarecrow, and Root Rider Fawn as his fixing.
Yeah, it's a tough looking list, I think, if you look at it. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, it makes sense. Like, there's some life gain in the 2-unveil guides to help support the Dark Tutelage, but you're like comboing with cards that are not great in the format. But then, right, like I said, when I watched the games and like he stomped people in the first game with 2-unveil guides, and I was like, okay, maybe he knows something I don't. But then I think it bore itself out that the cards largely, I think, performed more closer to how you and I are evaluating them. And it was a tough draft for Nathan. I don't know. It's impossible to say what would have happened if you had gone into red like I wanted to, or maybe teamer like you wanted to. But I think the one thing that you can say looking at Nathan's deck here is that it's a bit at odds with itself. Like, if you're valuing up the Beanstalk that highly, you weren't able to really maximize up the Beanstalk. Like, you they're just kind of cards in this deck, like, did not get near the ceiling of that card.
And I think that bore itself out in terms of his record. You know, he stumbled a little bit in the feature match that we saw, and ultimately went 1-2 in the pod.
Yeah. All right. That gets us on to day 2. Draft 2, where Watsy, I'm sure, heard your feedback and put the number 1 ranked player at the end of day 1 as our featured drafter, which is Anthony Lee.
Anthony Lee, 6-0-1, our only undefeated player. And I was looking at the pod, and he was sandwiched between Reed Duke and Gab Nassif. And I was like, oh, so we're certainly going to watch Reed or Gab as the featured drafter today. But no, Anthony Lee, they did it. There we go. Some credit to the actual undefeated player. They get to be on stream. You love to see it.
Yeah. All right. So pick 1. Anthony sits down. And I think Anthony's draft largely goes very smoothly through the first 4 picks. So we're just going to kind of fast forward here. Pick 1, Yena Red Tooth Regent, the rare, as the best card in the pack. That is the 4/4 green white rare that can let you copy enchantments. Pack 2, you follow that up with a Red Tooth Vanguard. That's the 1 and a green 3/1 that you can pay 2 when it's in your graveyard to return it to your hand whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under the control on your side. There's some other blue-red cards in that pack, but I think you're following up Yena with Red Tooth Vanguard there always.
Mm-hmm.
Pick 3, you're thrilled to see a Cooped Up to combo with Yena. That is one of the best cards to pair with Yena, the white removal spell that you pay 1 and a white for and enchant a creature. That enchanted creature can't attack or block, and then you can pay 2 and a white to exile enchanted creature. And then pick 4, oof, you are beyond hyped to see Princess Takes Flight. That's the saga that chapter 1 exiles a creature, chapter 2 gives a creature +2/+2 and flying, and then chapter 3 returns the creature back to gameplay. But you're
no chapter 3. It's chapter 1, chapter 2.
chapter 2, and then do something with
chapter 2, and then, yeah, pick it up or sacrifice it. End of story. We don't know how the story ends. It never happens. Chapter 3 never happens.
And if you want to see mass confusion on my face, check out our YouTube.
Check out the
channel.
YouTube.
It's like, wait,
and subscribe.
Did I read this card wrong? Yeah. And I think green white is the best home for Princess Takes Flight. So just absolutely thrilled to see that there.
I mean, that's talk about combo with Yena. I mean, copying Princess Takes Flight, hello.
Yeah, who needs to get rid of the Princess Takes Flight? Just 2 of them, yeah, will end the game quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to pick 1, pick 5. After, I think, starting green-white on rails for the most part. So there's an Evolving Wilds here. Titanic Growth, the 1 and a green +4/+4 trick in green. There's Break the Spell as a white card, single white to destroy an enchantment. If you blew up one of your own, you get to draw a card. There's Warehouse Tabby, the black 1/1 that can get Death Touch. And whenever an enchantment goes into the graveyard from play on your side, you get a 1/1 rat. And there's also a couple red cards in the pack here.
Merry Bards, the 2 and a red 3/2 that can put a young hero roll on something if you pay one, and Grand Ball Celebrant, the 1 and a red 2/2 that celebrates to get +1/+1 and trample.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep here with Anthony. I'm curious to hear your thoughts with the Evolving Wilds. I really like this because, just like as we've seen, as we talked about last week, power level in this format is rampant, and having access to off-color adventures is nice. Having access to, you know, it's possible it gets pushed off of green and stays base white, gets into another color, but really wants to still play Yenna. Great. Like, I think Evolving Wilds has a lot of power at this point in the draft for him that I like taking it.
I agree. I love the Evolving Wilds pick here. Mostly just want to tell a story here to set up a future pick that I think I really want to go deep on.
Perfect. But
I think one thing you should do here while you're picking Evolving Wilds, which I agree with Anthony is the correct pick for all the reasons you listed, I think you should be a little worried that there's no good green or white cards in the pack for you. Like, literally, Titanic Growth and Break the Spell is it. And then I think you, as a result, should be clocking, which means taking note of Merry Bards and Grand Ball Celebrant as, you know, good red aggressive cards to maybe pair with your white, what you mentioned. I mean, like, you are pretty heavily white, and red-white is one of the best decks in the format. So just noting that, okay, maybe red's flowing, maybe I will pivot into red-white.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me. I'm Ethan Boros Sachs, baby.
All right, moving on to pick 6. See the following cards as options. Again, we're back to a bunch of commons here, largely. There's Protective Parents. That's 2 and a white for the 3/2. Dies. You put a young hero roll token on something. Huge flavor win there. Frostbridge Guard, the 1 and a white 2/2. And you pay 2 and a white to tap target creature. There's Eerie Interference at uncommon. That's the fog variant that I loved in the Crash Course that I will never cast.
Are you finally off this effect?
I've come to terms with it. Yeah.
Okay.
Not a good card.
Until it's reprinted in 3 years and I have to argue with you again.
Exactly. And then 2 more cards that I think we are largely clocking here. Edgewall Pack, 3 and a red for a 3/3 menace that makes a 1/1 rat when it ETBs. And Flick a Coin, 2 and a red for the deal one, make a treasure, draw a card.
Yeah, this is one where I might, you know, if I am fully, and certainly with this hindsight of clocking the red to tell the story of the pick we're going to see in a couple picks, I might speculate on the Edgewall Pack here. These white cards are so medium. Like, I guess you take Frostbridge Guard because it's a 2, but like, these are D-minus filler level cards in my mind that I don't care about. I'm only taking them to get deep. Like, by taking Frostbridge Guard here, I'm taking the stamp of, let me just get out of pack one deep in white and I'll figure out the rest in pack two.
I think that's the reason to not hedge.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's the reason to not hedge. I still don't think you hedge here yet. You could. I think it would be reasonable to, but I think it's also super reasonable to take Frostbridge Guard. I don't think one way or the other is right or wrong. I like the Frostbridge Guard pick because this is similar to what we talked about with Nathan's draft, where like the reason to hedge is that you don't have the world's strongest start.
Uh-huh.
But you do have a pretty banger start here in like Yenna into Red Tooth Vanguard, cooped up Princess Takes Flight. That's high power level and high synergy, all of the cards on the same page. So I think giving yourself a chance for that to work out here is worth it over hedging. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense for sure.
All right, so moving on to pick 7, you see a pack with the following cards. Commons, there's Diminishing Witch. That's the 2 and a blue 3/2 that you can bargain to make a cursed roll token. Shout out to Carl, who
he registered draft in his first draft, right, where he almost 3-0'd. He registered a +40 card deck with 5 copies of Diminishing Witch and 3 copies of Hatching Plans.
Left a 4th in the sideboard, right?
Uh-huh. Or left a fourth hatching plans on the board, or didn't pick a fourth hatching plans. Yeah. I was going to say Diminishing Witch basically says 3/2, sacrifice hatching plans, draw 3 cards, because that's the reason you put this card in your deck.
For sure. So there's a Diminishing Witch here. There's a Minecart Daredevil, continuing to see the red. That's the 2 and a red 4/2 and adventures to give a creature +2/+1 as a combat trick. And there's an Evolving Wilds, a common as well, the fetch land. And then in the uncommons, there's Spreading Seas, the 1 and a blue uncommon that cantrips and turns a land into an island. And then there's Tempest Heart, which is 3 and a green for a 3/4 and has the adventure for 1 and a blue to draw 2 cards, discard 2 cards.
Remember when we wanted that to be called Frant Elk Search?
I don't remember that, but that's a banger name.
All these cards are highly medium. I mean, Minecart Daredevil might be the best. And so another red card to add to the story we're telling here, but just thrilled again for the same reasons to see Evolving Wilds pick 5, thrilled to see another one pick 7.
Yes, completely co-sign. Evolving Wilds, I think, is 100% the right pick here, and that is what Anthony Lee took. Pick 8. This is the one I want to get into. So there's a Conceited Witch in the pack at common. That's 2 and a black for the 2/3 menace, and you can pay black to put a Wicked Roll on something. And then you're diving into 3 uncommons still left in the pack. There's Griffin Airy, 1 and a white for the enchantment, that at the beginning of your end step, if you gained 3 life, you can make a 2/2 flying griffin. There's Ash Party Crasher, the red-white gold card, 2/2 haste, and when it celebrates, if at the beginning of combat you've celebrated, it gets a +1/+1 counter. And then there's Dutiful Griffin, 3 white-white for a 4/4 flyer, and you can pay 2 and a white to sacrifice 2 enchantments to return it from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, so I think, confusing to me first, we'll talk about what Anthony picked, which is Griffin Airy, which is quite confusing to me, because I think Griffin Airy is niche at best. I've had one deck where it was good, and that deck was black-green, and Griffin Airy was my only splash card. I was just making buckets of food, and Griffin Airy was good there. I think that's probably where Griffin Airy is at its best, is not in a base white deck, but as a splash. So I was sort of surprised to see that as the pick here. And then there's Dutiful Griffin, which you could say like has some synergy because of enchantment stuff, right? You could sack a Princess Takes Flight maybe, and Dutiful Griffin has largely panned out to be, again, filler with a capital F. In this format, you almost always, I think, just want Charmed Clothier over it, the 5-mana 3/3 flyer at common that puts a roll token because it celebrates, it has roll or a synergy, whatever. I don't think either of those holds a candle to what you get in terms of opportunity cost by taking Ash here.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's interesting between Ash and Dutiful Griffin for all the reasons you outlined about Dutiful Griffin, right? If you're not taking Ash, you should take Griffin because it combos with all of your enchantment cards. Like, who knows, maybe you have a roll plus a Princess Takes Flight. It's just another way to get Princess Takes Flight off the battlefield, which is very important if you're going to maximize that card. Mm-hmm. So I think could make a case for Dutiful Griffin here, but I think all of that pales in comparison to the potential upside of Ash. Like, this is the time to hedge for several reasons. One, green-white has been drying up since our first 4 picks that were excellent, right? Like, we've had good picks to feel good about what we're doing, like, but the double
green specifically has dried up.
Yes, yes, yes. Green specifically has dried up, for sure. So we're potentially looking for escape routes here, mm-hmm. and Ash is a great one. You're heavy white. The only, like, you're certainly willing to abandon Red Tooth Vanguard, which was your second pick. You have the ability to splash Yenna Red Tooth Regent if you would like. And Red White is one of the best decks in the format here. So you've seen some red the last few picks when there have been largely empty packs for you in green white. And even if you think you're whatever, 10% to play Ash here, which I think could be higher depending on how you want to draft, if you want to try to pivot into red white, even on the 10% chance that you're going to play it, by passing it here, you know you've shipped some red in the last 3 packs, and maybe your neighbor's solidly in red and trying to decide on their second color, and you put your neighbor into red-white, which is an absolute disaster for you for pack 2, because then they're snapping up some white cards that you're going to want in pack 2. I just think there's numerous reasons to speculate on Ash Party Crasher here.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think this is, I mean, I really liked what Anthony did in most of this draft. This one, I think, is a pretty big mistake.
Obviously, though, it worked out well. Top 8, baby.
I know.
So moving on, picks 9 rounds out with an Archon's Glory.
What a gift with the Princess Takes Flight. I mean, Archon's Glory, I got a mea culpa here for me. You know, a few weeks ago, I was like, I don't really get Archon's Glory. It's high up in the data. Oh my God, do I get Archon's Glory. I love this card. It's so good. Like, if your opponent is even close, if they're even thinking, if there's a whisper of a thought in their head that they're racing you, Archon's Glory says, no, not today.
Today is not that day. Also, if your opponent is slightly afraid that you might be able to kill them, Archon's Glory says, yes, I get to kill you.
Yes, I can, actually.
pick 10, Savior of the Sleeping. Pick 11, Savior of the Sleeping. That's the 2/3 Vigi. It gets powered up when enchantments go to the yard. Largely, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pick 12, there's a Frostbridge Guard. Pick 13, rare drafting that Rhystic Study Commander value.
Stamped, baby.
And pick 14, Intangible Virtue. So at the end of pack 1, you know your base white. You've got a really powerful card in Yenna, and you can play anything. World is your oyster thanks to these 2 Evolving Wilds. This is a great start for you. I do think pretty big mistake to not have the ability to pivot into red-white here after taking Ash Party Crasher, though. You're just closing routes off for yourself.
And well, it's interesting. Like, honestly, the Ash of it all would have made pack 2, pick 1 a lot harder, because I think it comes down to Decadent Dragon is as rare. It's a 2 red, 4/4 flyer. I think it also has trample. And when you attack, you get to make a treasure, and it's got the adventure for 2 and a black instant speed. You exile the top 2 cards of your opponent's library, and for long as they remain there, you can play them as if they were your own. And then there's a second copy of Princess Takes Flight as well. So without the Ash, a clear Princess Takes Flight. With Ash, you're really pulled. I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said about having the second Princess Takes Flight, because you already want to sort of warp your pick order a little bit, like, you know, bumping up Celebrants and anything with Bargain. The second Princess Takes Flight really, you know, it's just like, okay, cool. Now I'm happy to take hits and power level for things like that, you know? But this is a question, again, you want to ask yourself, if you're hashtag delaying the decision, if you're getting deep into a color,
why are you doing so?
If not for Decadent Dragon, then what? If not for one of the best cards, then what? And you also have this sick option, because you have the 2 wilds, like, you could decide, okay, I'm white, red, I'll splash Yenna, and I can even splash the black adventure half. And
like a Prof Prism or two, like ties the rim together, and then you get
giant,
really powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I would have taken Decadent Dragon had I had the Ash Party Crasher. I'd like to think I would have anyway.
It's interesting. So then pick 2, he gets a Gingerbread Hunter, which is great. So the 5-drop, 5/5 makes a food, and then the adventure 2 and a black, what's it called? A tasty snack.
Point for you.
Yeah. And then pick 3, he does get the Holy Grail, right? The stockpiling celebrant for his double Princess Takes Flight. But then pick 4, I'm very confused by personally. I think is another pretty big error. So just to recap, so he has taken Princess Takes Flight, not the dragon. He has taken Gingerbread Hunter, so got himself a little deeper into green. But again, that can just be splashed. You could be white, black, whatever. Stockpiling celebrant, deeper into white. Pick 4, 2 really good white options. Cooped Up, the Pacifism, and Hopeful Vigil. 1 and a white enchantment makes a 2/2 knight with vigilance. And you can pay 2 and a white to sacrifice Vigil. And whenever Vigil goes to the graveyard, you get to scry 2. And then another Red Tooth Vanguard is here as well. The 2-drop 3/1 trample that he picked up. Pack 1, pick 2. But I'm not even eyeing Red Tooth Vanguard. I think even if I know I'm white-green, I'm not taking Vanguard here.
I agree. You're taking Cooped Up or Hopeful Vigil. Probably Hopeful Vigil, but I could see a strong argument for Cooped Up as well with Yenna. So maybe it is with Cooped Up.
I would
with
take
Yenna.
Vigil personally, because he's already got 1 Cooped Up, and Vigil is so good with Celebrant too, which he just grabbed.
Yeah.
I would take Vigil here. I think, like I said, even if you're green white, I think Vigil is a better 2-drop.
Yes, I agree.
And then pick 5, he ends up grabbing a Ginger Brute. Out of a pack that is, you know, it's not like it's powerful, but I'm curious about the implications of Gingerbread says to me, you think you're aggressive, right? Like, that's where that card is at its best. In my mind, it's at its best in Boros with roll tokens. I don't see that happening here, especially when you've got double Princess Takes Flight and stockpiling Celebrant and Yenna. You're trying to go over the top as far as I can tell. And Brute does not do that. Like, I would be eyeing, there's a return from the wilds. If you want to keep going deeper in the, hey, I'm white, green, splash around life. You could do. Is this the deck for Knight of Doves, Ben?
I don't think so. Knight of Doves is real bad.
You could even just pick up Leaping Ambush as a green trick for the sideboard, for the main deck, whatever. Like, the Ginger Brute pick is confusing to me.
I agree. So pack 2 rounds out after Ginger Brute, Kellen's Light Blades, which is great. Another bargain card for the 2 Princess Takes Flight into Hamlet Glutton, which is truly excellent. Another bargain card for the 2 Princess Takes Flight into Knightly Valor, into some whatever moderate playables. So at the end of pack 2, really needs to fill out the 2-drop slot, but kind of cooking here with the double Princess Takes Flight, the 3 ways to bargain those away. He's got Stockpiling Celebrant to pick it up, Brave the Wilds, and double Evolving Wilds to splash anything that's come in packs 3 here.
Yeah.
So pack 1, pick 1, anything you open, complete gas for you, and the best card in your pack is Utopia Sprawl, which, while a good card, is a bit of a letdown considering how open you are here.
Correct.
Takes Utopia Sprawl, pick 2, picks up an Agatha's Champion, which again is another perfect card. With the bargain synergy with Princess Takes Flight. And then pick 3, this is another interesting pick here. Choice between Brave the Wilds, the green mana fixer that can bargain a card away, or Song of Totentons, the red rare that you can pay red X and make rats equal to the number of X, and your creatures have haste that turn.
Yeah, I mean, he's already got 2 Evolving Wilds and a Brave the Wilds that he picked up, pack 2, pick 10. Song of Totentons, if you're, I mean, he's not ramping, but like, he is interested in just hitting land drops and like doesn't really have anything else to splash other than the, what is it, puny snack from the gingerbread hunter. Like, I don't see why I wouldn't take Song of Totentons. At the very least, you take it away from one of your in-pod opponents. Like, the card is really good. And then you get to maybe play it. Like, yep. Maybe you don't even start at main. Maybe you side it in sometimes when you think it's appropriate for the matchup, whatever. Like, I just don't think you need the second Brave the Wilds here. Maybe he just wanted maximum
bargain
for the two Princess Takes Flights, but I feel like he's kind of set up there.
Yeah. And then pick four, huge gift in Woodland Acolyte. That's the white-green kicker card that can rebuy a permanent from the graveyard. And the deck rounds out to be very good-looking. I mean, it's a strong-looking green-white deck. I think a couple missed opportunities along the way in the draft, but I think one of the cool things to note, final record was 2-1, a solid-looking deck here, green-white, enchantment synergy, everything you would want. We felt like green was being cut, and Reed Duke was to Anthony's right, as you mentioned, and we felt like green was cut. Reed was definitely in green, like
he's heavy green
with a blue and a light black splash.
Yeah, and Anthony did end up, you know, squeaking out. He had ended up with green white, a 7/7 split in his mana with an Evolving Wilds and a swamp for that adventure off of the Gingerbread Hunter, and ended up getting the 2-1 with a pretty solid green white deck. I think left some power on the table in the draft, but it still managed to get a good record and obviously managed to get into the top eight. Reed Duke to his right, cutting green heavily. He was the 3-0 drafter at the table.
You'll love to see it. I'm rooting for Reed pretty hard in Worlds. Although Willie Edel's there too. There's so many good names.
Yeah.
Worlds is going to be gas today.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, I'm hoping that there's janky cell phone coverage of the top eight for the 100K as well, because I'm rooting on Jason Yeh pretty hard for the top eight. Really hope that they're able to get that top prize, but super excited for them anyway for getting the Pro Tour invite. So a lot of great Magic ahead for us this afternoon, Ben.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Jazzed about, as you said, Magic with stakes. I think that's the theme of this episode. I am just fired up for competitive Magic on all fronts. All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to CoolStuffInc.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over there for any and all purchases, please use code LOL at checkout to let them know we sent you there. And more importantly, to get 5% off of anything you purchase. You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our Twitch channels, our YouTube page, which we're pumping out content on, as well as this episode each and every week. There's links to our tier lists, our merch, our episode backlog, all that good stuff over at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.